Now, unfortunately, Dr. Douglas Heddy is unable to join us this afternoon, so I'll be giving the overview about studying the course here. So what I'll do now is perhaps unpick a little bit of what Janet said by way of introducing the course here. As you perhaps already said, what we do offer here in theology is a very interdisciplinary combination of subjects, and that is something we find very attractive for our undergraduates, this ability to carry on with a number of interests that we've developed at A-level and don't necessarily want to leave behind. So primarily, as we said, it's theology, it's philosophy of religion, and it's religion. And probably one of the main ways that you'll be learning about that is through text. Textual analysis forms a very large part of what we do here. So being keen to engage with literature, being keen to engage with historical sources, all these sorts of skills that perhaps you've been developing through A-level, some of you may not have done, and as Janet alluded to, Anka, one of our lecturers, has a physics background, as does another of our lecturers, and probably every year we have somebody who has a sort of science-y background coming on to study the subject here. But for those of you who are based within the arts and humanities, this is something that you'll be used to doing already, but it's something that you need to be really keen to engage with at degree level. I think also the fact that it combines very traditional elements. For some people, it's getting the foundations in a subject, the way it's been taught for many generations, and subject matter that's been looked through, looked over, analysed and critiqued in many different ways. But of course there are also a number of emerging areas of research. Although we perhaps get a feel that surely everything's been touched upon by now, there are always new elements arising, and that's also the benefit of a university education, which brings you into contact with people who are doing that research, who are out in the field. We're fortunate today to be joined by a number of academic staff, but many have already left Cambridge. They are spending the next 3 months somewhere else, either researching in an archive, in a library, or actually out in the field speaking to people, interviewing people, and they will be writing the books and journal articles that you will be reading when here. As I said, it's this interdisciplinary program as well, and I feel that this graphic quite illustrates quite well the number of different elements that you can draw upon when studying theology. Theology is something that's part of life. Some of you will be bringing something to this course. It may be important to you. For others, it may be something that is of interest, that's more distant from your life. But because of that, it threads through so many other different disciplines as well. So you can study literature from a religious perspective. You can study languages, sociology, as I said, science. And that science isn't just in the background of some of our lecturers. As you'll see, hopefully, in the packs that you've all got, we do offer a number of programs as well. So you can study cosmology, but bearing in mind how people who have a particular faith, particular belief, deal with these questions that for those who perhaps are outside of faith feel very, very distinct. They feel that the two don't match at all. But here in this faculty, you're able to bring those questions into direct conflict and not say to resolve them, but to discuss them in depth. So that's a bit of a sort of sales pitch for theology, I suppose. Why study theology? You could, of course, study that anywhere. There are many, many institutions that offer theology and very, very good programs. But why study it here at Cambridge? I think one of the big selling points, really, for our degree program is its flexibility. We don't really ask you to tie down your particular interests at any stage of your degree. We do have two compulsory elements, and we'll talk about those in a moment. But beyond those, you have the opportunity to choose something that's really of interest to you. But possibly, by the end of your first year, and after speaking to friends who are studying different elements of the course, you might want to completely change direction, and you can do that. And you can do that after your second year as well. So at no point do you have to make a choice and choose a particular path through our courses. Hopefully, for those of you who've got the packs in front of you, there is a document that goes through this in a little bit more detail, that demonstrates how you could specialise if you'd like to, or some variety of what we have on offer. So I do think that's something to bear in mind, is flexibility. Secondly are the modes of study, how you approach the subject. As with many other institutions, you'll be attending lectures, and depending on the number of papers or modules that you study each year, you'll be having probably one lecture a week on that. So that means coming to a room like this. We have several other rooms here. We're very fortunate that we've got a sort of purpose-built building that meets our needs. But coming here with 20, 30, 40, maybe 50 other students and listening to a member of academic staff for an hour. But that's obviously great. You can get a lot of information from that, get a lot of pointers about where to take your reading. But in terms of actually developing you as an academic, as somebody who is developing academically, it's actually our supervision system that is our real strength. And I'm sure many of you will have heard about this, perhaps attended a talk this morning on it. But just to briefly run over it for those of you who don't know the system, this means that you'll be sitting with a member of academic staff for an hour, and it's maybe one a week, maybe three over a fortnight, that sort of spread of supervisions. The person you're with will be a specialist in this field, so it doesn't matter which college you apply to, don't worry about applying to a college where the fellows may be based in say, Christian theology, where you're interested in Jewish studies. You'll find you're brought to a member of staff who's an expert in this particular field, and you'll spend dedicated time with them. Now that might be going over a text. It might be just you, or it might be you and one other person. Alternatively, you might be bringing a piece of written work to that supervision. You submitted it the week before. Someone will read through that, they'll mark it, and then you have the opportunity over that hour to really refine your essay writing skills. So for those of you who come perhaps not with many arts subjects in your suite of A-levels that you're taking or at IB, what it does enable you to do is really develop over the course of the year, really make sure that you're clear, that you're arguing effectively, that you're using all the right source material. Obviously, at some other institutions, you're somewhat reliant on pieces of coursework, getting a mark back, getting that feedback, but at that point, that coursework already counts towards your degree. So here, you've got a whole year to prepare for the exams at the end. And then finally, as Janet said, we're a really strong community here. Well, it's quite a small group that you'd be joining if you applied to study at Cambridge. We normally have about 50 students in a year. So everybody knows each other quite well, and we offer coffee every weekday morning with postgraduates, with academic staff as well, and this is a really lovely, relaxed way to meet with peers and other people and to discuss with them some of your ideas, to bring things to the fore that perhaps you don't feel warrant an email or knocking on someone's door. So there is a really strong community here. So just to go into a little bit more detail about the elements in year one, what we call so first of all, we do ask that all our undergraduates take a scriptural language. Now, we have four choices here, and you do have three choices. So there's New Testament Greek, Hebrew, Quranic Arabic, or Sanskrit. Now, for the majority of our undergraduates, they have no background in these languages at all. One or two might have come, say, with ancient Greek, or possibly some have come with some Arabic. But in the main, students don't have a background, so we really do start from scratch. And where numbers permit, particularly New Testament Greek seems to be quite popular, we do have multiple classes for people at different levels. Even if you don't have a background in it, you may find that you have an aptitude for language learning, perhaps if you've done some modern languages, and therefore you're often grouped with similarly abled students. This just means that the teaching is tailored to your needs, and that's really, really important for something that's completely new to you. So that's taught, there will be some supervision, but mainly taught in a class-based structure, so slightly smaller groupings, going over in detail a smallish passage. And you will get to know that passage in a lot of detail by the end of the first year. We're not expecting you to be fluent by the end of the year by any means. Also a biblical paper, either one from the Old Testament or one from the New Testament. And the reason is not that we expect you necessarily to follow a path that involves Judaism or Christianity, but it's the skills that you'll be developing by looking at some text, being able to analyse it in depth, even if your interests lie, say, with Hinduism or Buddhism, the skills that you develop in that paper will be very important to you. And then you have a choice of three papers, and this is where that sort of diagram comes in. You can select from philosophy, sociology, we have a history paper, and one on world religions, much more perhaps religious studies, as you might understand it from school. So we keep that breadth, but as I say, it's a sort of foundational year. Just to say a few more words about learning the language, just say you don't need certain grades. I often get quite a lot of queries throughout the year, people saying, well, at GCSE, I didn't carry on with the modern language at A-level. Is that okay? Absolutely, as I say, people have all sorts of backgrounds in language learning, and we really do work with you individually to ensure that you reach the expected standard by the end of the year. Also, yes, just to point out, you'll mainly be reading and writing. There isn't an assessed oral component. Obviously, you'll pick up some of the pronunciation as the year goes on, but you won't be examined on that side of things. And perhaps just in terms of a sort of taster of what the exam will be like, you're expected to translate both ways, so from the scriptural language into English, from English into the language, and then also to reflect on issues of translation, because that's another great reason to study a language in its original form, to understand that for the other papers that you'll be taking, you'll be reading a lot of texts. So if you can understand that something may have been translated differently to how somebody else may translate it, and the implications that may have for understanding as a faith, then that's going to stand you in good stead, even if you decide to leave the language behind after the first year. Now, on the piece of blue paper you've got in front of you, there's a list of the papers or modules that have been on offer this year. Some of those titles are illuminating, others less so. So what I thought I'd just do is pull out some of the lecture titles from one or two of these. So in the first one, we have the paper Understanding Contemporary Religion. And this is a sort of, this is a sociology paper, I suppose. Religion through the eyes of sociologists. So it's divided into two halves, as you can see. There's the key theorists and debates come in the first half of the year, and then the topics. And it just helps drill down a little bit, as you can see, with bringing issues of politics, of gender, colonialism, so obviously links there to history as well, issues of symbolism as well. So there's some of these big topics that will be useful, again, throughout the course of your study. And just to pull apart another paper as well, World Religions in Comparative Perspective. What does that actually mean? Well, as you can see, we're talking about Judaism, we're talking about Islam, we're talking about Buddhism, and Hinduism as well. And the issue of law here is a really strong element. So again, I would urge you, perhaps once you've gone away from today, to have a look in a little bit more detail what's on offer on our website. We do drill down, and if any of these topics really interest you, you'll see that there's a reading list attached to them as well. Now that reading list is intended for when you stop university, but if it's something that you really want to read up on, something you might want to mention in your personal statement, if that's an area of interest to you, then it will give you some pointers in some new directions. In terms of your second year, so as I say, at this point forward, you have completely free choice. There are no compulsory elements. Some people do like to specialise, and you'll see in the document in your pack, it's got sort of bar blue headers on it, that if you really feel you want to follow a philosophy of religion path, you can do that almost exclusively. You can take three or four papers in that particular field. Some people also like to carry on with their language. As I say, it's not compulsory from this point forward, and other people like to pick up a new language as well. I was speaking to a student called Rebecca, and she did New Testament Greek in the first year, and then realized actually she really enjoyed Old Testament studies. So she speaks up Hebrew, and she's carrying on with the New Testament Greek as well. So again, someone who didn't come with a languages background has really sort of picked up that and run with it, and that's something she really wants to make use of in further studying when she graduates. And by year three, again, free choice. There's lots of different topics to choose from. And I suppose this is where you kind of get closest to the research that's being done by academic staff. Up till this point, they're giving you overviews, they're giving you introductions to subjects. But here, you can really drill down some of the topics, and you'll see from the titles, are really quite specialised. There's a few more examples there. So you're studying four papers in your third year. One of those can be a dissertation. It's completely optional. It's 10,000 words, but a lot of students really do like to hone in on something that's of particular interest to them, and possibly to bring in something that's of interest that's slightly outside the subject area as well. We had a student who didn't graduate this year, the year before last, who was a very prominent member of the university radio, the radio station as part of the university, and so that was kind of his life. He spent all his time there, he did the breakfast show, and he wanted to go on and work in radio. So he brought media in at this point. So while it wasn't explicitly covered in the course, he could do that. So this is your opportunity, if there's something slightly outside the course, to carry on with that. And here are a few more dissertation topics as well. As you can see, we've got sort of modern politics, we've got the Arab Spring in Egypt, we've got the Nicaraguan Revolution, so quite recent history, I suppose. We've got music, we've got literature, art, philosophy, there's cinema coming in there, and even kind of medical ethics were the bottom two options there as well. So a whole range of options that you can take as a dissertation. As I said, you can focus in on that, or you can maintain flexibility, but at no point you have to declare that decision to sort of follow a track. The freedom remains with you, and you don't have to at any point sort of offer it. There's no form for filling in, so really, as your degree progresses, as your interests develop, and that's what we really hope as well. We hope that people come knowing they've got an area that they're interested in, but that actually this sparks your imagination. This is something, you speak to friends, you hear about other papers that are on offer, and it's something you really want to follow up in detail as well. So that's a little bit about our course. So assuming that you think that's very interesting, that's something that you'd really like to apply to, what sort of person are we looking for? We're not looking for any specific A level. Some subjects do require people to have studied the subject at A level, but we're aware that many schools don't necessarily offer religious studies or philosophy and ethics. So people do come with a whole range of backgrounds, and that makes for really interesting. interesting discussion. There is no kind of pro forma, there's no one size fits all theology. That goes for people with faith or without faith as well. We find that we get people from across the religious spectrum, people who have perhaps been brought up in a faith but don't feel they have a very strong belief themselves. This degree programme isn't about deepening your own personal faith. You may find that that's a kind of offshoot, that's a side of it, but obviously this is the critical academic study of religion. Neither do we say that you have to leave religion at the door. If you come with religious experience, you bring that into the classroom, you bring it into the lecture room as well. And again, so we have this incredibly sort of vibrant community, different backgrounds, educationally, but also from a religious perspective as well. So those are sort of things that we're not looking for, but what are we looking for? We're looking for a demonstrable interest in this area. We're looking in your personal study to see where you've gone beyond the curriculum. It's important to talk about what you've enjoyed at A-level, but also to say, how have you taken this beyond the classroom? So have you read more widely? Have you watched some YouTube videos? Have you listened to podcasts? Have you been able to attend a talk? Even if you don't hear from a particular faith background, you might want to go and speak to somebody who does. Just all little things that just demonstrate that this is something that really matters to you. This isn't just something that's important when you're at school and then you walk away at the end and leave it there. We're also looking for strong writing skills. And we will often ask for a piece of academic work before you come to Cambridge for us to see your skills. But as I said, there is plenty of opportunity to develop those writing skills once you're here. But having that ability to write and reason well. And then an academic record, a high academic record. So those sort of bits on paper, and how does that sort of materialize in terms of actual skills? Well, any way that you can demonstrate some of the following. So there's this motivation for independent study, being keen to do that, because obviously once you're here, there will be less contact time than you're probably used to at school. So being able to take yourself off, being able to read around a subject on your own. Enthusiasm for learning, I know that sounds obvious, but when people come to interview, some people do tend to assume that that's a given. But be keen, be enthusiastic. This really matters to you, and make sure that that shows. Being able to rethink initial positions, and that's something else that will definitely come out in interview. Perhaps be given a small passage to read before you go in to interview. Now, you won't be tested on knowledge. As I say, some people don't come with any prior knowledge from having studied the subject at A-level. But being perhaps given leaders, being able to think about something that you're given, and then possibly being thrown a curveball and having to rethink your initial position. Be open to that. As I say, we're not looking to test you. We're not looking to see how certain you are about your ideas. We're actually looking to see how open you are. And all these other elements as well, so where possible, being able to think critically, and if you do have a language ability, talk about that, because obviously that is part of our course, but as I say, if you don't, that's absolutely fine. Now can I see, perhaps a quick show of hands, who attended a talk this morning about colleges? Just a few of you, so I will just quickly run through this, and apologies for duplication. Obviously, applying to a college is a large part of the application to Cambridge, and a lot of people do have questions about which is the best college for theology, which college should I apply to, which one shouldn't I apply to. And perhaps it's useful just to slightly unpick what the university is and what a college is. So I've divided it up here. As you can see, the role of the university is to determine the course content. So that piece of blue paper that you have in front of you, all students who enrol on theology and religious studies will be studied, or at least have the option to study papers from that. You won't be closing off any options by choosing to go to a particular college. The lectures, the seminars, they're all organised centrally. And all your examinations are the same. So again, you're not going to be having a very different experience to other students. Colleges, however, do admit the undergraduates. So you do need to apply to a particular college, or put in an open application and be allocated a college. The supervisions are organised this way as well. But as I said, if your college doesn't have a specialist in that field, that's fine, they'll find you an expert at another college. And as you can see, really, the main things to take into consideration is this bit. It's where you're going to be living for a few years. So in terms of choosing a college, it's probably helpful to think about what makes you comfortable. Do you like old buildings? Do you like new buildings? Do you like a mixture of both? Do you want it to be close to the faculty? Do you want it to be further away? Nowhere's very far in Cambridge, especially since most people have bicycles. It doesn't take very long. But it might be something to swing a decision for you. If you have the opportunity today or on another occasion, do look around a few, get a feel. But I wouldn't agonise over it too much. So again, just to quickly run over information you might be familiar with, the deadline for applications to Cambridge is earlier than for other institutions, so it's the 15th of October, that's when your UCAS application needs to be in line. Once you submit your UCAS application, you'll be asked to also submit the supplementary application questionnaire, and that gives you, I think, an extra week to submit that. It's just to collect a little bit more data, so we make sure that we have comparable data for all applicants. But also, it does give the opportunity to make a Cambridge-specific personal statement. If you don't have one, that's fine. You can leave it at your other personal statement. But if, for example, you're applying to study philosophy at other institutions, but you'd like to apply to Cambridge to do our programme, that would be your opportunity to mention why. Don't feel you have to say it in your other personal statement at the risk of pressuring it in another institution. So it gives you lots of opportunity to do that. I think it's also worth flagging up the second interview scheme here. So if you are invited to interview, and probably over 80% of our applicants are, a very high proportion, you'll also be asked to go to interview at another college. And the reason is we have such a small number of applicants, we can't offer places to everybody at each college. So this way you get another set of interview notes, and that has the benefit that if your application is taken to the pool, which is a very large meeting that happens after all the interviews, where strong candidates who can't be offered a place at one college are taken into the pool, and other colleges can choose and take people out of the pool as such. So you have two sets of interview notes, and obviously that's to your advantage. It means you have somebody else to interact with. It means if you feel that you messed up the first interview, you've got another opportunity to go again. And 50% of our applicants are made an offer. And actually, this year, last year, it was actually slightly higher. 85 applicants for just over 50 places. So there's quite a high conversion rate, but we do find actually the quality of our students is going up each year. So you're a very self-selecting bunch of people. I think it's also worth quickly pointing out that 40% of our admissions are from the pool. So that's why I say don't spend too much time thinking about a college, because actually there's quite a high probability that you'll be offered a place at a completely different college to the one you chose. So obviously we've got the rest of the afternoon to find out more information, but we do update our web pages quite frequently, so please do go online and find out more information about our course. And as I said, in particular, you can drill down to find out more about the papers that are on offer.